Did you hear Devlin's voice ringing out there?
Yes.
That's what you call raising the roof, huh? Oh, you know, kids, I'm so thankful when you have talent and you share it with me. You know, I really appreciate it. I really, really appreciate it. Life is good. Boy, I'd have trouble being a minister in a church where you had to be dignified. I'd sure have trouble, wouldn't I?
No ditties for us.
No ditties. No ditties. Oh, Millie's witty ditties are by the wayside. They're back on cassettes, and nobody has cassette players anymore. So
they're, I got one in my car.
They're just sitting there in a box all by themselves.
You take them in and they'll put them on CD.
I got one in my car, too.
I'm sorry?
I got a cassette player in my car.
Oh,
yeah?
There's still some out there.
See, Millie's a girl, lived out in the mountains with... What? I've forgotten them. They'll come back? Oh, wow. That'll be dangerous. Well, anyhow, another person that I love is going to share their thoughts with us tonight. And you know what our Wednesday night is about? We practice our mediumship. We practice public speaking. And you think it doesn't take much. But I'll tell you, when you have to talk about God and your personal feelings about God for the first time, it's not easy. Because it really is so precious to you. And I'm so thankful when people like our speaker tonight will let me encourage him to coming up here and sharing his thoughts with us. I've known this guy now for 20 years. And I still think he's okay. No, I love him. I love this. Dennis O'Donnell.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming. Well, fortunately, we don't require much decorum here. And I'm not really prepared with much, so we're all in luck. My postman brought me a package, though. I'm all excited about it. I have a friend in the Okanagan Valley in Washington where they grow the apples. And she is, her father owns an organic orchard. And I knew her since she was little. When I broke my leg and was in laid up all winter long, this little girl used to come over and she'd make me little mobiles and things. But she's all grown up now and she started a business making apple salsa. And so there's some apple salsa in here that I just know is good. And Patty Walsh and I are going to try some. And I'm hoping that I can become the sole distributor in the Southland.
She sent it to Patty, so maybe it's really supposed to be for Patty.
Well, I send all my important stuff that I don't want to risk getting lost in the mail to Patty's address. All right. Well, anyway, it's good to see you. Thank you all for being here. I'm gonna try to talk about some things, combine some thoughts, and I'm really a little bit. I don't know what I am. I've been doing this Kundalini yoga stuff just lately, and I do it, and it wakes me up. And I usually do it at 7 in the evening, and then I can't sleep at night. So last night I said to the teacher, "This is not working for me. I'm working real hard, and I'm sweating. And I'm supposed to be sleeping better at night." So he did some stuff and had me do some exercises. So last night I slept really, really, really soundly. And I don't really feel like I woke up yet today. So I don't know, but we'll do the best we can. And those of you who might know, Einstein has been working with me recently. So I'll weave a little bit of that in. And one of the things he said, hi, George.
Hi.
Glad you're here. One of the things he said, combinatory play seems to be the essential feature of productive thought. And so I'm hoping that I can combine enough into something kind of like productive thought. He also says creativity is intelligence playing it with itself. So I'm not sure if there's a lot of creativity there or intelligence, but I've sure been playing with myself a lot lately, so we might be in luck tonight. And Patty, if I say anything that makes Millie's face start to wince, give me the nod and I'll tone it down some. All right. Most of you know Donna Larson, and she writes a lot of songs and sings a lot of songs. And she's got one that particularly caught my interest a while back. She's got this song about being perfectly imperfect. And interesting concept to me. And I admire people that are brave enough to live their life that way. And Donna certainly seems to be able to, create something and be brave and happy and proud to just put it right out there. And I actually found a book. I look on the Amazon a lot. There's a book called The Spirituality of Imperfection that I found. So I ordered up a copy and started digging into it, and I find it to be really one of the best books I've read in a long time.
What? Except for mine.
Oh, except for yours. Yes. Even eclipsing the Bible, yes. Yours. I've been reading yours for 20 years. It is a good book. Anyway, so it talks about, in life we know that failure is the norm. I mean, basically, baseball teaches us that. It's a game that actually, has errors built into it, and everybody knows that, a really, really good baseball player strikes out, two out of three times. An average baseball player strikes out more than that. You hear these stories. I don't know if it's really true or not, but I understand something like, a lion goes hungry 9 times out of 10 trying to get something to eat. So perfection is not something that's necessarily, part and parcel to our existence and our experience here on the planet, anyway. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the thoughts in this book. And a lot of the book, surprisingly enough, derives its thesis out of what it talks about being the most significant spiritual movement of the 20th century, that being Bill Wilson's development of the 12-step program in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it goes on to talk about how, especially since the Christian era, and it doesn't say that this is all brand new stuff. In fact, it talks about, desert fathers, centuries and centuries ago, and, certain... what's that word? Aesthetics? What's that word? Those folks, kind of living this way. But kind of when Christianity came in, the goal was, like, everybody's supposed to be perfect, and, you're supposed to beat your sins out of you, and you're supposed to flog yourself. And, I mean, the game plan is we're all supposed to be perfect, and God forbid us if we're not. And that didn't work too well for a lot of years, and in the modern centuries, it almost hasn't worked at all. And a lot of people have said, "Fooey with this," and have gone on to seek other avenues of spirituality. One particular group that had no patience with this "I'm perfect" routine is a bunch of drunks trying to get sober. They just found out that they could not measure up to that expectation whatsoever, and they weren't even going to try. And so they ended up kind of through trial and error and kind of rediscovered a spirituality of imperfection. So basically, what they found out is, and they had to admit to themselves, and sooner or later, thankfully, they admitted to their God that, they're powerless and they're whipped and they've got no ability to control this situation whatsoever. And, they got humble enough to say, help. And what they ended up doing was forming a community of a bunch of people that were powerless and realized that they were whipped and that on their own they couldn't do it. And rather than the community being one set up with, you know, all kinds of leaders and some more spiritually advanced folks and ministers and people that knew the answers and was going to, you know, disseminate this great wisdom from on high down to them. And rather than that, what they had was what the book introduces, a concept called mutuality. And within this community of people, there's an experience of these folks realizing that on their own individually, they didn't have the ability to stay sober. But somehow, in the process of talking amongst themselves and sharing their stories one to another, they found an avenue for grace to enter, and they found the ability to stay sober. So this idea about mutuality, it's basically, it's the idea of if you want to get something, you got to give it away. And if you give it away, then you've got a chance of getting it, what you need. So in order to stay sober, what they found out is they better go out and find another alcoholic and, you know, give them the opportunity to stay sober, give them an honest ear, not an ear like, I've got all the answers, and you better sit down. If you want to get sober, you better do it the way I tell you. Instead, they came with the idea of, yeah, I've got that problem too, and here's the experience I had, and the other person can kind of begin to relate to this. And it becomes a shared community of equals, each individual agreeing that they're kind of just stumbling through the dark, not really knowing how to do this, but by being willing to share their stories and commune in fellowship together and seek their higher powers together, not even necessarily agreeing on what that is, but just kind of being willing to think that, well, perhaps there is one, and maybe if we ask, you know, it'll help us. And somehow, magical miracle of miracles, this particular group of people has managed to get healthy. And they've managed to take that same model and apply it to all kinds of other problems that, you know, the human species has. And seems to work pretty well. In fact, there are just regular, plain, imperfect people that don't even have big problems that are now embracing the concept of the spirituality of imperfection, and they realize that they don't have to be running around beating themselves up, calling themselves sinners. They can just be regular human beings, and God probably loves them anyway, and their personal acceptance is much more easily assured and embraced that way. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that concept in relationship to Fraternal Spiritualist Church. And this church is a little bit unique relative to a lot of the more mainstream ones in that, although we do have, you know, Pastor Millie and we do have some ministers, nobody really is holding themselves up as being, you know, somebody with all the answers and the only answers and this is the way it's done. And instead, what we kind of have is a bunch of people sitting around sharing God stories. In fact, in Millie's classes, the very first thing we have is, you know, who out there among us regular people has had an experience with God this week? And let's share our God stories. And in the process of regular individual people sharing God stories, all of a sudden, our sense of spirituality and our sense of comfort in our lives and in our world and, you know, with spirit is enhanced. It's kind of interesting sometimes. I've been here a long time, like Millie says, you know, and I'll watch newcomers sometimes. They'll come. People come here a lot of times when they're hurting or when they're troubled or when they're feeling powerless. you know, or somebody has died, or they've got a problem that just can't, you know, it just won't seem to go away, no matter how much praying they do. And they come, and it's kind of like, you know, come to Millie, you know, Millie, I want to have, you know, teach me what to do in this situation. What's the answer, you know? And, you know, they come here, and they think Spirit's going to tell them the answer, and you quickly find out that Spirit's not going to tell you the answer. And some people kind of get brokenhearted and distressed by this, and they leave. They figure they'll go out and find somebody else, some other psychic somewhere that will tell them the answer. And I've seen sorry situations where those people, you know, 2-3 years later, they come dragging back in after having some horrendous experience and, you know, losing lots and finding out that, you know, they're a whole lot more powerless coming back than they were when they left the first time. You know, and they come back and they kind of find out that it's a process of, you know, we don't have the answers, but if you come and you kind of like follow us and be with us and be in the community, then things will start to dawn on you and spiritual realities will start to develop. You know, it's kind of like the story about Jesus at the well, I think it was, you know, and the guy comes and he says, you know, Jesus, you know, give me the answer. And Jesus says, well, come follow me. And he says, well, I don't want to follow you. I just want you to tell me the answers. You know, I got too many good things over here, and I'm not leaving my wealth to come traipse around the desert and follow you. And, you know, he ends up kind of leaving knowing that he's not going to get an easy answer to his questions. Well, it is fun to watch people come back, though, and then to start coming to classes and to get assimilated into the group and to begin to get their, you know, their sense of self back and to get their sense of self-love. And even though lots and lots of failures, you know, might have transpired in their lives, they end up standing up here and talking about the victories and talking about, you know, a peace which passes all understanding that somehow they've managed to get. Does that sound right, Millie?
Good enough there, honey.
Okay. I don't want to say anything that's not right, because you're in charge, because you know this stuff. Okay. Let me see. What else did I want to talk about? So the community idea of being in community, and it's kind of like everybody's kind of walking on this pilgrimage together. In AA they talk about spiritual experiences, you know, and they talk about the burning bush quick ones and how infrequent those really are, the instantaneous enlightenment kind of stuff, as opposed to the slow educational variety of spiritual awareness and spiritual growth. And, you know, that is where the community comes in. And, you know, the book talked a little bit about, too, because I've always been one that's kind of thought that the instantaneous, quick Buddha enlightenment under the tree, you know, transcendent, let's just cut the chase and get out of this Maya worldly experience and get to the good stuff, thank you very much. I always thought that would be the way to go, and it hasn't happened despite some attempts, feeble attempts, you know, but I seem to be somewhat powerless in bringing that experience about. So being part of a group that's kind of on a pilgrimage of growth is really the path that I've been blessed with. And I want to try to tie in, a few of you may have been here in my last talk about when I talked about the we space. I talked about, and this was kind of a lesson that Einstein had given me, talked about the ground of being, God as the, let's just call him, the masculine, solid, formless energy / matter, ground of being, unformed stuff. And then I talked about, you know, the, you know, somewhere along the way there was a big bang, and all of a sudden all of this ground of being God stuff started to take on form and started to evolve, and the feminine aspect kicked right in, and all this stuff started to become artistic and beautiful, and evolution happened. And but kind of where these two concepts overlap is what was kind of presented to me as the we space. And if the lesson I was given was, if that we space is comprised of people that are a little bit more conscious and that are aware that they are not just necessarily themselves, but that they are part and parcel of the entire universal community, and you get a two or more of those people working together, that they can actually kind of work with the creative evolutionary process consciously and help direct evolution in more positive ways. That's kind of like what we as conscious sentient beings are kind of being asked to develop and grow into a little bit more. So I haven't thought about it fully yet and developed it all, but the idea about this mutuality within that we space, I think that initially, you know, the idea of mutuality and the idea of spirituality as it's been commonly defined so far, at least in the last century, has been, let's figure out a way to kind of help each other and help ourselves stay alive and stay sober. But on a grander scale, as we go forward, I think we're going to end up seeing this mutuality concept utilized more and more to actually consciously evolve and consciously direct for the good, despite the Tea Party people. I don't know when it's going to start happening, but hopefully before, what, tomorrow morning at 9? So anyway, let me see what else. So, and I'll finish up here with this, because I get into this stuff, and how do I talk about this? One of the things that these alcoholics, apparently, they talk about the root of their problem, according to the Big Book, which Bill Wilson wrote, and their experience, the root of their problem seems to be self-centeredness and selfishness, and that these people tend to seem to think that it's, the world's not working out the way they think it's supposed to, and despite all their efforts to make it, they're powerless to make it be, and nobody's performing right, and if they would just do what they were told, by these alcoholics, that everything would be fine. And it's this self-centeredness concept that kind of is a bedrock concept anyway in kind of what their challenges are. And I wanted to, somewhere in here, I wanted to talk about, briefly, the idea about, little kids, the child development concept. And these little kids, they kind of pop up, and all of a sudden, they kind of think that they're the center of the universe. And like, mom is there, and all they got to do is scream, and the world's supposed to stop for them. And, they kind of get this imaginative idea in their head that they're all that. They're it. And so, whether or not we're born sinless and perfect and thinking something different and then quickly learn with the first scream that, or whether or not we really do kind of pop out thinking that we're Bruce Almighty. This idea about having this faulty sense of reality and this overly active imagination that I am it. I take that faulty imagination concept and the idea of just thinking wrongly, I guess, is a way to put it. And Einstein talks about, you know, imagination being more important than knowledge. The process of spiritual growth seems to be largely through the operating community, one of kind of like getting our attitudes and expectations and our thought patterns kind of readjusted to a more correct way of imagining and viewing the world and creation and our relationship with it. And in our classes and in the sharing of our God stories and in the sharing of miracles and in the process of even, you know, loving support of people that are having problems and that are you know, going through stuff, and our process of helping bear them up and our ability to, you know, 2 years down the road when it's happening to us, know who to go to and ask, you know, how the heck do you do this? You know, our ability to imagine something different and something larger and something healthier is what we develop by coming here and following the path. Not coming and asking Millie for what's the answer or expecting Spirit to give us the answer today. It's kind of a slow process kind of thing. So that's about all the time I've got to talk about. I'll just steal another couple of minutes just because I can. Because you're here. But, Einstein's been working with me some more, you know, and I kind of wander around because, you know, God's not doing things right a lot in my life, you know, and I don't mind telling him about it either, and you know, I just kind of, you know, I've made certain bargains and business deals with God through the years, and lo and behold, he's not holding up his end of the deal, and I don't know what to do about it. And, you know, and I pray a lot and remind him of things. And so I get pretty pouty, you know, and sometimes I think, you know, the only way to address this problem is to go on strike, you know, which certain spiritual paths, you know, condone this kind of behavior. And I've actually, you know, done vision quests and been up on the hill with Native American men and put me up there. And you sit up there for 4 days with no food and no water, and you know, and you go on strike, and yeah, God will show up, you know. But, you know, so I kind of got to the point where, you know, my prayer is pretty kind of, okay, let's just cut to the chase, you know. Kill me or heal me, God. Kill me or heal me. And, well, doesn't seem inclined to be killing me any. Either that or it's really slow. Instead, what's been presented to me is what I believe to be the heal me avenue. And I think Einstein's had a hand in this because it's an interesting one, because it requires, they don't want to hear from me anymore either. Einstein and God, they don't want to hear from me, no more prayers. What they've decided to do is introduce me to this form of yoga that I've not done before, Kundalini yoga. And the actual practicing of this stuff is the prayer. So I don't have to think about it, and I don't have to have any words, and God doesn't have to sit through any kind of long prayers like, you know, the kind of stuff I just gave you for 20 minutes. God's tired of this stuff. So I do these moves, and in this yoga, you've got mantras, and you've got mudras that you do with your hands, and you've got breathing that you're doing, and postures. And so by the time you're trying to do all this stuff, you haven't got time to think. And lo and behold, somehow in the midst of this stuff, though, there's some kind of a magic, and I'm going to try to get Einstein to explain it to me more. But, you know, it it kind of presupposes that most of us are not going to get that instant enlightenment, transcendence kind of thing. And that the goal, rather than that, is to just try to kind of get your mind to a kind of like a neutral space. Perhaps not unlike the Buddhist idea of you know, emptying your mind some. Except when I try to sit and do that, I can't turn the monkey mind thoughts off. And so without all this stuff going on at the same time, blowing my circuits, I can't stop it. But when I do all this stuff, I kind of get to a neutral mind. And somehow within this space, the judgments stop, and the frustrations stop, and the mental obsessions about these women stop, and everything mellows out. It's just been amazing, and I'm really anxious to see how Einstein puts this together and explains this energy flow to me a little bit more. So, you know, I've been playing with a lot of thoughts, combining different things. Like I say, kind of playing with myself a lot, and I'm sure glad that the class year started again. And I hope to see how many are in classes here? A few? Good. More than half. Beautiful. Those of you that are new, kind of like if you don't hear your answer like right away, or you come for 3 or 4 weeks and you know all of a sudden we stop giving you messages, you know, and it's no fun anymore. And gosh, you know, something's on TV. Well, if you kind of like just kind of make the decision, well, maybe we'll just follow along for a little while. It picks up speed again, and it gets real interesting. Thank you.
You think, kids? You think Einstein would choose to work with him?
Yeah.
Draw of likeness, right? I never studied the life of I never studied the life of Einstein, but I'm sure he wasn't any saint from the little bit that I did read of him. He never claimed to be perfect. And for our Dennis here, as you know, the AAs have been so good for him. And what, have you been a member now for how long?
Well, I don't know, a little while.
How many years, Dennis?
I don't know.
I don't know, 20, I'll say. I don't think I ever saw you drink, so it was had to be before that.
No, you never saw me.
Turn this wonderful young man out. Now, yeah, he's got things he has to work with it. But we all do, from whatever it is we went through, whether it's divorce or loss of a child or studying the wrong subjects and trying to do the wrong career. We've all got stuff we have to work with. Do you agree with me or not?
Yeah.
Yes, I think you would. And I'm just really proud to know him. And I can certainly see why Einstein didn't want to work with him. He was a little surprised the night that Einstein came, right? Who was in class that night? Who was it? Were you? Patty and, yeah? Anybody else? I don't think Dennis will forget it, and I don't think we'll